Good morning. Talking about yourself dying is one of people's least favorite conversation topics. People do not like facing their own mortality. It's something that people don't like thinking about. They don't like talking about it. But the unfortunate reality is that virtually everyone dies sooner or later. And the fact that you don't talk about it, you don't plan or prepare for it, doesn't make things any easier. And in fact, especially for a frum yid, by not doing any estate planning, by not writing a will or a tzava, you create a tremendous problem. And the issue is that there are basically three ways a person's wealth can be distributed when he dies. The first is if a person writes a will, if he writes a tzava, he does some planning, then hopefully his assets will be distributed the way he wants to. People will have, they will give it to their children, they'll want to take care of their spouse, they may have tzedakas they want to give it to. So if a person does some planning, he writes an appropriate tzava in a will, then there's a reasonably good chance that lachameh ve'esrim, his wishes will be followed out. In contrast, if a person doesn't do anything, so then we have to deal with two separate defaults. Legally, each state has different statutory defaults. If a person dies, the government decides how to split up the money. A spouse will get something, relatives will get a share. If there are no close relatives, then Uncle Sam comes in and says he's the Irish, and he'll get. Now, from a legal sense, that's usually pretty clear what happens. The problem is that in halacha, there is a seder ha-yerusha. If a person dies without a tzava, if a person dies without making any appropriate will, there's a seder yerusha. The Torah defines who the yorshim are, who gets what, and in what order. Now, typically, the seder ha-yerusha is not going to be the same as the legal, the statutory in yorshim. And therefore, if a person dies intestate, he doesn't have a tzava, what will happen is, from a legal point of view, when it goes to administration, when the judge has to decide how to distribute the assets, he'll follow the laws, and he'll give it out based on the whatever state you live in. From a halacha point of view, when a person dies, his nechasim go to the arshim. You don't need a kinyan, you don't need any action. It happens automatically. So what happens then is you have a situation where legally or in practice, the courts will award the assets to a set of people, while as a matter of halacha, it does not belong to them. As a matter of halacha, it will belong to the Yarshim al-Pi Torah. And unless the legal beneficiaries realize this and go ahead and either get a mechila or actually return the assets or the money to the Yarshim, they're essentially going to be gun oven. So a person who people work their entire life accumulating wealth, accumulating assets. They're doing it primarily for their children, for their yarshim, to provide for them, to make sure they have. But if you don't prepare a tzava or a will, you're basically dooming your children, your spouse, whatever it may be, to being gun oven. And therefore, besides for the obvious tax benefits and other purposes to write a tzava, from a halacha point of view, a frum yid, it's especially important to avoid this issue, to avoid a situation where you'll have legal beneficiaries who are not the halachic beneficiaries. So let's discuss, we're going to begin by talking about what is the Seder HaYerusha. What is the default? If a person does not write a tzavoy, does not write a will, who gets the assets lachar misa? Now we're going to see that the Seder HaYerusha is not just a default, it's more than that, but that's a topic for another shiur. So let's begin. This is, we had in the Maariv Mekayimus today, it's in Parashas Pinchas, the Torah describes the Seder HaYerusha. Now before we go into what the Seder HaYerusha is, just a brief word about what it is not. What it is not is politically correct. And the Seder HaYerusha has not been politically correct for a few hundred years. In fact, there's a Chuvus HaRosh, it's a siman of how things have changed. The person was asking the Rosh, it seems that what was in style back then, what was considered enlightened and civilized, was to make sure that your Yerusha went all to your eldest son, to the Bechor. Bidinehem, the style was not just to give Pishnayim, there he got everything. And the reason for that was, if you were a duke, you owned a couple of villages, you owned a little province somewhere. So if after you died, your village would be split among all of your children, they would end up without much of a dukedom or without much of a kingdom. So in order to keep the power in concentrated, they would try to make sure that one child would get everything, he would take over the position, he would be the governor, and the wealth would and the power would not be diluted as the generations went on. Now, al pi halacha, that is not how Yerusha works. So the Shoyal asked the Rosh if he could set up a system where somehow we could make sure that everything goes to the oldest son. So the Rosh wanted, he wrote back very strongly, he wanted to take no part of it. He says, this is Seder HaYerusha, Torah says, Chukas Mishpat, so whether you like it or not, whether you understand it or not, this is a chayk, this is the way the Torah says to divide the assets. And the Rosh did not want to respond to this particular person's request. So let's begin. The first Yoyrish, the person dies, the closest level of Yerusha is, if a woman dies, her husband Yarshins everything. Now, there's a machlokes, it's actually, if you look at the Pesukim, it doesn't mention anything about a husband, it's a drasha. According to most Rishayim, it is Daraisa, the Rambam holds its Midivrei Seferim. But if a woman dies, no matter how many children she has, even if it's a second or third marriage, whatever it may be, the halacha is the husband yarshins everything. There is one exception, and that is something which is roi, which the halacha really means if the woman lent someone money before she got married, and it was never collected, and then she died. Since it was roi, she never had it in her possession, it was a loan the entire time, there the husband does not yarshin that. Now, in a modern-day example, this is more common than you may think. If a woman has money from before the marriage, either she was married before, she has money deposited in a bank. According to most poskim, the Igros Moshe says this very clearly, when you deposit money in a bank, you are lending the money to the bank. So if the money stays in the account throughout the entire marriage, then it was roi. It was a loan that was she lent out before she got married. She never had it in her possession. And in such a case, if she dies, the husband would not yarshin her. That Yerusha would go to her children. Whether it's from this husband or from a previous husband, they would divide it. But that would go to her yarshim, to her relatives. It would not go to the husband. Excuse me? That's true. And you can have many loans that a loan, even when it's due, is still called roi if it was never collected. What? No, it's considered Yerusha. We're talking about something which she had from before the marriage. If she earned it while they were married, so then it goes into Maisi Adayim, you'll have to figure out. It might belong to him. But something which she had from before, or a Yerusha that she got, while the husband may have certain rights to it, it's in the same Malug, he could be Oichol Peres, but it's not his money. There's no din that a Yerusha that a wife gets automatically belongs to the husband. He has certain rights to use it, but it's hers, and therefore, if it was Roy, if she never actually collected it, the halacha would be is he would not Yarshin it.
I would assume very few people keep a pesach on that when they get married 60, 70 years ago, how much money they have.
Well, usually it's not so negeya, because if it's a first marriage, then her yarshim are her children, which they have together. This really comes up more in a second marriage. In a second marriage, people very often keep very exact cheshbonos. So now another case where this could happen is that if while they're married, she gets Yerusha. So it'll come out, it'll be interesting. If she gets the Yerusha and it's, she yarshins a bank account, so then it was always roi. She never actually had control of this money, and then the husband would not yarshin. Mitzad sheni, if you go ahead and she switches from one bank to another, arguably what she's doing is she's taking one loan and she's collecting it. And now there's a different debtor, there's a different bank that owes the money. That it's very likely that switch itself would be like a gvia, and as if you're relending it, so in there it's likely it would be subject to the Dinei Yerusha. Stocks are probably considered muchzik because it's a direct ownership that you have. Now, one could argue if you don't have paper certificates, if you have a margin account where they can go ahead and they can lend it out, they can give it to a short seller, then arguably it's no longer, there's nothing here which is necessarily mufzik. The brokerage may have lent it out, the shares may not exist. They have to pay it back to you. So in such a case, you have a margin account, I can hear it being roi, but even then, that's only if the shares were actually lent out, which you're going to have a very hard time figuring out if that's the case. And even if they are lent out, they probably are collected at some point, so it's probably mufzik, but it is a good question. Doesn't make a difference. Every choiv, any choiv that's very clear in halacha, even if the choiv is due already. You know, this, the case is she lent out the money before she got married. So this could, the discussion of Yerusha could be 40, 50 years later. The money was due, was never paid. Still, this means she has the right to collect it at any time. The bottom line is it's debt. There's nothing which is nothing which is here. It's just money that's owed, and therefore it would not be subject to Yerusha. That's true. Okay, that's true. But the probability of collecting doesn't make a difference. It still is debt. It's very secure debt, but it's debt nevertheless. There are poskim that say a bank is different because of that. Roy poskim, I believe, hold that a bank, no matter how secure, has a din of debt. And especially today, we've gone through a banking crisis that's not quite as secure as we would like to believe. Fine, but that's even worse. That is an arif. That means now the debt is not secure, but now you have a guarantor who's going to step in if need be. But so we'll discuss this tomorrow when we go through the Bukhar, because there's another discussion of Roy, but Api Pash just would have a din of a Choyv. And the Gersh Moshe does have a tremendous chiddush. The Gersh Moshe says that if a woman has money where the husband does not know this halacha, he does not think he yarshins it, the Gersh Moshe has a tremendous chiddush in Ebenezer's Chelek Aleph Simon Kuf Dalet, where he says there's no din Yerusha if the husband thinks he doesn't yarshin. Again, that's the Gersh Moshe's chiddush. Not going to be ma'arich on that today. But anyway, so going back to the Alpi Halacha, if a woman dies, the husband yarshins everything. There was a takana where tonight ksuva has been in dichrin, where in a second marriage, if a woman died first, her children would yarshin her ksuva. But again, today it's not very negayah, the Ramos. So that is the first level of Yerusha. That when it, what? Yeah, if you want to put it in, if people do sign, especially with second marriages, people do sign prenups. You know, in halacha, it's not so simple to do it with siluk. It's a whole process, but it certainly could be done, and it's fairly common in second marriages. So that's the first step. That if a woman dies, her husband yarshins virtually everything. Children get nothing. Now, although a husband yarshins his wife, the reverse is not true. When a husband dies, the wife is not considered a Yerush whatsoever. And al pi halacha in Dina Yerusha, she gets absolutely nothing. Now, this is probably the single biggest difference between the halacha and lehavdil, the civil law, that bidinehem, the wife always gets something. Even if you try to cut her out, there usually is some sort of minimum amount that she has to get. But as far as halacha is concerned, a woman is not a Yerush. Now, although in Hilchos Yerusha that is a very clear fact that she gets nothing, the reality is there are a number of other halachos which we'll discuss a bit later. More often than not, the wife is entitled upi halacha to the bulk of the estate. We'll discuss a little bit later why, but it does not come from Hilchos Yerusha. As far as Hilchos Yerusha is concerned, the person's sons, his children, his parents yarshin him. His wife is not considered a yorish. Now, after a spouse, the next step in the Yerusha is a person's sons yarshin whatever assets he has. If a person has sons, then grandchildren get absolutely nothing. The sons split everything. In a regular case, if you have normally the sons split it, you have three sons, you divide the Yerusha three ways. Even if a person has daughters, a daughter of midoy raisa is not a Yerush at all. Again, there are certain takonis drabanon that we'll get to a bit later. But as far as Hilchos Yerusha is concerned, Yerusha goes to the sons, not to the daughters. If there is a Bechor, the person's first child, his oldest child is a boy, so he is considered a Bechor. A Bechor gets Pishnayim. He gets a double share. He gets double the amount of any of his siblings. And what that means is if there are three boys, so what you do is you divide the estate four ways. The Bechor gets 2 shares, 2/4, which is a half, and the other 2 sons will each get 1/4, each will each get a quarter. So the Pshutim, the regular sons, will each get a quarter, the Bechor will get a half, and that way he has Pishnayim. Same thing if there are 5 boys, you divide the estate 6 ways, the Bechor gets 2/6, he gets 1/3 of the estate, everyone else will get 1/6, and again, that's a way where the Bechor will get Pishnayim. A Bechor as well only gets Pishnayim with Muchzik, something that the father actually had, tangible assets that he had at the time that he died. Roy, if money was owed to the parents, and for that matter, if he had money in a bank, which we'll discuss next week a little bit more by Richos, there the Pashas would not be a din of Pishnayim, because that would have a din of Roy. Now the din of Bechor is only in the father's assets. If a person's mother passes away, so there the sons split everything equally. There's no pishnayim by Yerusha Se'em. It is only by Yerusha Sa'av. Good. We'll have to deal with where there's Yerusha Bechlal in that. We'll get back to that point either this week or next week. What? Okay, we'll get that in there. So the halacha is when a person dies, his sons yashin everything. If he has sons and daughters, the sons get everything. Now, if a person does not have any sons, he only has daughters, so then the daughters all get the Yerusha. There's obviously no din of Bechor, but however many daughters there are, they split the Yerusha. Now, what happens if a person's children or one of his children predeceased him? In other words, his son died. So the halacha is the son's yarshim step in their place. So a person has 2 sons, and one of the sons dies. So that son's children, those the deceased's grandchildren, will inherit his share. So if you have a case where you have a person had 2 sons, again, let's assume there's no Bechor. One son had 1 child, the other son had 3 children. If the 2 sons die before the grandfather, then they would end up, since had their children been alive, each son would yarshin half the estate. So their children step in their place. So the son that has 1 son, that grandchild will receive half of the estate, which is what his father's share was. The son that had 3 children, each of them will receive 1/3 of that half, or 1/6 of the estate. And that way, in other words, it's per stirps, each branch of the family will end up receiving the same amount, regardless of how many grandchildren or great-grandchildren there are. It goes by everyone is stepping into the parents' position, they're taking over what they would have gotten. We don't look at how many children there are on the next level. Yes, if there is a Bechor and the Bechor dies before the parents, the Bechor's children step into their place. We see that from Benoist Slavchad, that you do, the Bechor's children get the same rights that the Bechor would have had. Correct. In other words, if you have a case, you can have a case where a person has a son and a daughter. The son dies, and the son and the daughter each have, the daughter has a son and the son has a daughter. Now, if the first generation dies, the son and the daughter dies, what will happen is that the granddaughter will yashin everything, and the grandson will get nothing, because the granddaughter is the daughter of his son, his son's daughter. Since in the first generation, the son yashins over the daughter, so then the son's offspring, even if it's a female, will step into his shoes, and she will get everything. Her cousin, who is a grandson, will get absolutely nothing. So again, to review, the sons get. If there are no sons, then it goes to the daughters. If there are anyone predeceased the parents, their children, whether they're sons or daughters, will step in their place and yarshin whatever they would receive. No, and Bachar Nefo also has a din of a Bachar. Now, if a person passes away and he does not have any children or grandchildren, he leaves no offspring. So here the halacha is the Yerusha moves in the opposite direction. It goes up a generation. And the person's father will yarshin him. First, the Yerusha goes to the father. Yerusha always goes through the father's side. It does not go through the mother's side. And a person's father would yarshin him. If the father is no longer alive, then the Yerusha would, after going up to the father, would then go down to the father's yarshin. which means the deceased's brothers, his paternal brothers, those were his father's sons, they would get the Yerusha. If they're no longer alive, their children, in other words, the deceased's nephews or nieces, whatever it may be, will get the Yerusha. If he has no brothers and his brothers do not have any offspring, then you'll have to go up two generations. The person's grandfather will yarshin him. If his grandfather is no longer alive, it'll go to the grandfather's yarshim, which will end up being his cousins, and or cousins' children. And this is how we go. And eventually, if you go up enough generations and then go back down, every yid is eventually related. If you have to go up to the shvatim, that's what you'll do. And eventually, you will find a Yoyrish, and whoever the closest Yoyrish is, whoever the closest class of Yoyrishim are, they will get everything. But the assumption is that everyone has a Yoyrish somewhere, and whoever that is, if we can figure out who that is, they will be entitled to the entire Yerusha. The only people that may not have a Yoyrish is a Ger. A Ger Shenis Gayer is Kekot and Shenayil Dami. Once he has no relatives, so halacha is a ger that dies, his nechasim are hefker. He has no yarshim, they're hefker. Whoever comes first and grabs it, it's theirs. So it's very likely that he won't have any if what? Fine. So the problem is that Yerusha does not go through the mother's side of the family. And therefore, if a person dies, it's a machlokes. There are shitas that say that by a ger, there's a taisus in Bava Basra, and the Kveger brings down a zakan aron that say when you, by a ger, if he has no other relatives, then it does go through the mother. However, it's a chiddush. It's a halacha. It's not brought down in Shulchan Aruch. It seems that the nechasim would be hefker. Now, a similar case, and as we're going to see, this comes out in a being very, very, very common, or at least it was very common. Is what happens if you have a person who you don't know who the father is? You have a woman who was mezana, she's becomes mu'baras, and she's not married. You don't know who the father is. So that is a shtuki. You don't know who is his yichus. And there, the Jumas Hadesh and the Ramah Paskin, that it's like a ger, just like a ger who has no relatives. The nechasim are hefker. If you have a person who the relatives are unknown, the nechasim are hefker as well. And in such a case, if there's no one who claimed to be the father, and the halacha is, the nechasim are hefker, whoever wants to can go ahead and can grab them. Excuse me? Okay, so normally there's a chazak, right? Normally there's a chazaka, and normally there's a roiv, and normally the same way, if a person hits his father, he's chayiv misa. How can you prove that he didn't? This is before the DNA testing, how do you prove it's a father? Teretz is, there's a roiv bilas achar abal, there's the chazakos, and that's enough to establish a parent. On the other hand, if she was never married, and we don't know who the father is, even if she claims this is the father, but if he denies it, which there are many tshuvas about such cases, for a number of reasons he would deny it. So you have no proof. The same way you have no way to establish this is a Yoyrish. Halacha is, it's a shtuki. There's no known parent, father, and therefore, the Trumas Hadesh and Paskins, the Nechasim are Hefker. So this is the kasha. The Tzais asks, that what are you talking about? Bishlami by a ger, there is no Yoyrish. If there is no Yoyrish, and he dies, It's Hefker. No, there's no one here that owns it. In the case of a shtuki, you know there is a Yerush. You just can't figure out who it is. And therefore, the Tzoyis asks, It should be Yemurah. Now, it happens to be, it's right. In that case, it's not such a good riot because perhaps she was Mazana with a guy. She was Mazana with a guy. There is no Yerush. On the other hand, she's Neman to say that she wasn't, in at least in Isser V'Hatter. But what the Nesivas answers, When Yeshiva says it like this, he says that in a chanami, if you have a case, and we'll discuss this more in a minute, if you have a case where you're not sure who the parent is, let's say it's one of two, so if you have a suffix who the parent is, avada, there's din yerusha, you don't know who it is, so it will be a suffix, bez din yamunach, we'll have to figure out what to do. Zakhna Nesivas, when a case of a shtuki, it's not just you don't know who it is, it's impossible to figure out who it is. Because even if two Edom would come and say, we know this lady was a Mezana. But, okay, who says that this is who the father? Maybe she was a Mezana with someone else the next day. So in a case where it is impossible to figure out who the parent is, there the Nesiva says, that is like a Zut Yishal Yom. That's like it's Avudu Men Mekal Odom, and therefore it has a din of Hefker. Even by Karka, you find Taisus and Sukkah and Daf Lamed says a similar case, that even though we know Karka, there's no Yish on Karka, if something has been lost for generations, it's Nishtaka Shem HaBailim, there it's Hefker because there's no way to figure out who the owner is. And therefore, in such a case by a Shtuki, where there's no way to determine who the owner is, there it's not, you don't say Yamunach HaShayav Yo, there it's Hefker, and whoever wants to can grab it. Probably, but stick to Chayshin Mishpat. Okay, let me just go to one more case, then I'll take questions on it, because I think this is where people are heading. Now, this question came up. Baruch Hashem, today, having cases of a shtuki are not very prevalent in our society. But a number of years ago, there were many, many such shilas. And the reason was, and the questions were asked in the context of after World War II, there were many people who had assets. There were people who their entire families were as far as anyone knew, were wiped out during the Holocaust. And they had no known relatives. So the question is, if they had assets and they passed away, what do you do with their nechasim? So there are a number of tshuvas about this. There was a Yaivitz and Maram Lublin. They both seem to be dealing with a similar case, where a person moves to town, he had assets, he gave it to someone to watch, he had no known relatives, and he passed away. So Maram Lublin says, like the point that you made, he says that it's true you don't know who the relatives are, but you know he's a nice Jewish boy, you know he has relatives somewhere, so if you can't figure it out, so give it to Beis Din, let Beis Din hold on to the assets until we figure out whose it is. The Yaivitz in Siman Kuf Mem Beis and the Teres Emes in Siman Tzadi Gimel both argue. And they both say a tremendous chiddush. They say in such a case where the person passed away, you have no idea who the relatives are, he said whoever was holding it can keep it. Because you can say, first of all, who says this person was really a regular Yid? Maybe he was a ger. Maybe they were a stuki. Maybe he was a stuki. Maybe he was someone who never knew who his parents were. And in those cases, the nechasim would be hefker. Now, even if not, he says, maybe you are his long-lost relative. You have no idea. It could be anybody. So maybe it's you. It's obviously not anyone who's really in touch with him. So maybe it's you. Now, what you do if a person's father is alive, I don't know, it doesn't really work. And the Chakas Yaakov points out, you should have to share it with your brothers. But he says, but I'll call upon him, he says, in such a case where there are no known relatives, so there, the Maram Lublin says you have to give it to Beis Din. The Yaivis and Teres Emes both say, in such a case, you can keep it. Correct. So Chagas Yaakov says, you make a cheshbon, most people know that at least, you know, two or three generations, so you're able to, right, it's only a small fraction, unless you can claim that it's through your wife. And maybe your wife is entitled to it, and it's just Balug, and then you can tell your shvagers that it's from my side, you can tell your brothers that it's from my wife's side, maybe. But this is the Chokas Yaakov's kasha. He says, you know, api cheshbin, it doesn't really work in most cases. Now, the Chasam Sofer has two tshuvas about this. In the first, in Siman Kuf Chav Beis, he follows the psak of the Yaivitz and says that if you're holding on to it, you can keep it, and you don't have to give it to a Beis Din. However, in Siman Kuf Chav Tes, he has a slightly different case. There, he seems to be Chozer. There, he seems to say you have to give it to Beis Din. It's not clear. I saw some Achroinim assume that the Chasam Sofer was Chozer. And in the Halacha, at the end, he was Chozer and held, you have to give it to Beis Din. If you look at the tshuva, the second tshuva, the case is a bit different. The case in the second tshuva is, first of all, you grabbed it after death, after the person died. It wasn't bali yad beheter. And second of all, the case in the second tshuva is you knew who the parents were. So perhaps, if you know who the parents are, everyone agrees, if there is some, you know, possibility of tracking down the relatives, everyone agrees this halacha does not apply. And then it's an aveda. It doesn't belong to you. You have to give it to Bezdin. You have to have an apotropos. You have to guard it for that relative. The question is when it is virtually impossible. If it was really impossible, we'd have a din of a shtuki where you can keep it. But if it's highly unlikely and it's almost impossible, there we have this machlokes. Now I did say the Shevet HaLevi and the Kovetz Tshuvas also has. Both of them are machmir mikra hadin. They say that a person, they say you shouldn't stam keep it. But what they do is they have, there are a few different eitzes that they give. Chalkas Yaakov says, even though al pidin you have to be machmir, he says that's when you're dealing with an individual case. You have a story here, a story there, the halacha is you shouldn't use the money, put it in bezdin, hold on to it until the yamunach hachayav el yo. Zog the Chalkas Yaakov, he says a tremendous chiddush. He says after World War II, when there were many, many such people, and he says it's not kedai or it's not mistavra that it's really what these people would really want is to have this huge amounts of money frozen doing absolutely nothing. And therefore the Chalkas Yaakov is mechadesh, he says, in such a case you can make a takana, you can make an umdana, that it's kedai for all of them to let you use it, to let the money go to tztaka, li'ilu nishmasam, and that way at least epis the hatzala, they'll have something from the money. Now what they want. He says, even the Yorshim, he says, there's so much money sitting sloshing around that no one can access to. And the Yorshim know the chances of them getting it are so minute, it's kedai for everyone in Klal Yisrael to say, if I am a Yorish, I'd rather than want to go to tztaka than it is just to have it frozen. That's his chiddush, and he says that's what you can do. And so in Rulyashiv gave someone the Eitzah, in his case is actually a little bit different because it was a tzava, but what he says is you can use the money for now. But you should write down that you got this money from this and this person. And Mirz Hashem, when Eliyahu Navi comes, so you'll be mivar whether the halacha was like the Maravel of Lin or the Yavitz. At that point, you may have to pay it back. But to use it in between, he says, that you can do. Good. That's a good point. It probably would work in this case because even though yesh lodin DNA evidence, whether you can be moitzi mamun, whether it's edim, not edim, you can discuss that. But in a case of something which is davar shel hefker or an aveda, you normally return an aveda with simanim. Now a simon is not a raya brura, but since there is no muchzik, you're not taking it away from someone, it's just lying around the street, or you have a shomer aveda, there a simon is sufficient evidence to be moitzi. A DNA is probably at least as good as a simen or a simen mavuk. So, misama, if you do have a match, you would be able to be mitzi. That being said, bishleima, if the mother is saying this person is the father, so there's a way to test that. Okay, so perhaps you have a way to be mavar who the shtuki is. But if the mother has no idea who it is, I don't think it's very practical to go start taking DNA, genotypes for the entire population to track it down who this person is. So its mustama goes back to the level of the Ayavitz and would be hefker. But so not benegia mominus. Benegia iser v'heter shimei. But benegia mominus, especially if he's denying it, the halacha is hadas baldin kmei edim dami. If a father says, "I am not the father," now he might be saying it because he doesn't want to pay support. But the bottom line is he went to Bezdin and he was moida that he is not the father. If the child then dies and he turns around and says, "I was just joking, but I want the Yerusha," he has no money. So he does baldin kimei edim dami. He will not be able to take that money. If the Haggai in the Chalkas Yaakov in Chosh Mishpat Simin Tezayin through Chav talks about it. I don't remember which one where the Haggai is. There he says that by davar shel mamon it should be believed, similar to a case of mitzia. It's mashma from the Trumas Hadeshin that's not the case. But again, the Aruch HaShulchan also seems to hold this namanos. I don't know what the halacha lamaisa would be. So anyway, getting back to it. So in these cases, so just to sum up, in a case where it is impossible to figure out who the real owner is, that is like a shtuki. There, it's hefker. Whoever has it can keep it. In case where it's very possible, you just don't have the person in front of you, then Roy Poiskin would say it's Yamunach Hashayav El Yahu. In this case where it's very difficult and unlikely, there we have this machlokes, There are machmirim, there are mekilim, and halachlam aisa revach roinim do seem to be noita lahachmir, but say you could use it if you write down, if you, as long as you write down or you're machlit that when he comes back, you will return the assets to the rightful owner. So, when there is money that belongs in Beznin, it doesn't have to be Beznin per se. They could be a mamana and apotropos. Someone who either has aravos, he has the assets to guarantee it to Beznin, he could take it. The poiskim in this case do allow the person to use it. Now there is actually another interesting cheshbon. Some of the tshuvas deal with an apartment where you could not track the owner. You know, the owner died and you couldn't find the relatives. So there, the Dr. Choshen has another very nice cheshbon. He says, even if it belongs to the Yarshim, there's a halacha that we learned a while back. We discussed the sugya of Zenev as Eloi Chaser. If someone has something, I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it in a way where the owner will not lose anything. So the other halacha is, Zenev as Eloi Chaser is mutter. It's certainly potter. And if the person doesn't make a macha, then it's mutter l'chachil to go ahead and to use it as long as he won't have a loss. Therefore, in such a case where the owner cannot be found, where by you moving in and being nene from the asset, no one's suffering a loss. Adraba, you'll be there, you'll maintain it, you'll make sure that it won't deteriorate. So in such a case, it's certainly mutter to use the asset. Yesh lodan, whether it's yours or you can be mekadesh and isha with it, and that will depend on this yaivitz and the shmuz we just had. But as far as they use, there the place can say, since the true owner is not losing from it, it's certainly mutter. What? Yeah, it's like Haim al-Agra. It's like, now if you rent it out, it's not so posh that you'll have the money. Because because you're selling someone else's use. But if you want to use it for yourself, there would be a question of Zanan Vazel Chaser, and that the Poiskim are Mekel. Yeah, so there we discussed. There is a wear and tear on the property. On the other hand, there's a Milo, that an abandoned property. Exactly. An abandoned, there are actually two pshatim over there, either that or just an abandoned property. As you see, it deteriorates. It just doesn't last that long. So you're correct. That's the assumption that although you may, and in this case, I think it's clearly true. If no one's there, the property is not going to be in very good condition if and when the owner pops up. So this is the halacha. If you don't know who the Yorish is, if you can't be found, we have this halacha that in many cases it will be after. Now, although we spoke out before that a son yarshins a mother, there is an interesting halacha that what happens if what will happen is like this: if a woman dies, her sons yarshin her. What happens when her sons die? So if they have children, it'll pass down to their offspring, which is the mother's grandchildren. But what could also happen is that if there was a second marriage, then he may only have paternal brothers. What'll happen in that case is that if the mother dies first, her sons will yarshin her. When the sons die, if they don't have any children, it will go to his brother through his father's side, which is not related to the mother. Now, that is the al pi halacha, that's what would happen. If that's the sequence, the mother dies, and then the son, then the Yerusha will end up passing from the mother to a stepson who is not really related to her. However, this is only true if the mother dies first and then the son. However, the halacha is that although normally when a person dies, his children or his Yerushim step into his place, the halacha is if a person predeceases his mother, his yarshim that are not related to his mother do not step into his place to yarshim his mother. You do not because they are not directly related. The halacha is you do not yarshim because the person bekever does not pass over the yerusha from his mother to his father's brothers or uncles through the father's side. Now, where there is a bit of a question is if a pregnant woman dies. She has no other children. She dies while she's pregnant. So the question really is that assuming that here we have a question of who died first, the mother or the child? In other words, if the mother dies first, Then the moment the mother dies, the child, even though he was not born yet, the child could be Yerush. If he would be Yerush, and then he dies a moment later, then the Yerusha would go to his brothers, even if through his father's side, and they would get the Yerusha. On the other hand, if the child dies first, so then the halacha is, if a person that dies does not yarshin from his mother in order to pass it on to his paternal brothers. So over here, the halacha, the assumption is that if a pregnant woman dies, the assumption is that the fetus dies first. And therefore, in such cases, the nechassim would stay with her yarshim, her parents, her brothers, her yarshim, as opposed to the child's yarshim. No. So what's mashma over here is that the point is not because he wasn't born. What's mashma over here is that an uber in theory could be Yerush. The problem is that he dies first, and the sma therefore says, and he says that this assumption, this halachic assumption that we make that if a pregnant woman dies, that the child dies first, he said that's only when she dies a natural death. On the other hand, if someone comes and shoots her, or someone kills her. So since he shot the mother, not the child, there the Sma says it's lavdafka, the mother would die first. Sorry, it was lavdafka, the child would die first. And therefore, in such a case, he says, even though the child was not born yet, there the halacha is he would be moirish to his kroivim. Now the Ktzais argues, the Ktzais says that even in such a case, midei sveka loy nafka, it's true we don't know for sure that the child died first, when someone came and shot the mother. But it's certainly a suffix. It could have happened either way. And because it's a suffix, he says, Nechasim stay becheskas the Yorshei Ha'em. But what you see clearly is that even though it's still an over, even though it wasn't born, the Din Yerusha could still apply. You can be mezakah something to an over, and you can also have the Din Yerusha, for sure.